Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Veda Pragyananda, and today I'm going to give a short talk on Karma Yoga, the science of spiritual action. So, in recent years, a few Sanskrit words have crept into the English language, English vocabulary. For example, everybody has heard of mantra, although sometimes people have heard of the words like mantra, also karma, which we're going to talk about, but sometimes the words are misunderstood or not understood in their full meaning. For example, just with mantra, although this is not the main subject for today, mantra, the real authentic meaning is that some word or some sound or a group of sounds, which when repeated, will bring liberation to the mind, liberation to the person, liberation from the bondages of this world. But in the normal English understanding of it now is that even like, for instance, if a politician will go to one place and says, oh yes, I'm going to lower the taxes, then he gets on the plane and goes to another city and makes the same speech and says, I'm going to lower the taxes, and then finally he goes to the third city and makes the same speech again, or a little variation, but again he says, I'm going to lower the taxes. Then at the end of the day, the journalist who has to make a cute story about it then will say that Senator such and such has a new mantra, lower taxes. But that's not what a mantra is, because that Senator such and such just repeating some phrase, he may or may not be actually planning to lower the taxes, but and it doesn't have anything to do with spirituality. So the real meaning of mantra is that sound which when repeated will liberate the mind. Now, the word karma is a word which also is now part of the lexicon of English. So people know that you can have bad karma. If you do something bad, it's going to come back to you. What goes round comes round, you know. So this is actually not a bad understanding of it, but if we go deeper into the term, then we can understand the something on a more fulfilling level. So karma, actually, when people say, yeah, I have a lot of bad karma, they're confusing it with another word, which I will also explain. But first, let's get into karma. Karma basically means action. It's the science of action. Karma yoga is the science of action. So whenever you do an action, whenever you move an object from one place to another, that's karma, that's an action. So this is karma. Now, there's another word which is closely associated with this whole topic, and that's called samskara. It's spelled S-A-M-S-K-A-R-A, but there's like a ung sound on the M, samskara. And what that means is an action in its potential form. You know, for every action, there is a reaction. This is a physical law, of course, the Newton's law of motion, that you make an action and there's a reaction. That's how rocket ships work. You know, there's action going out the nozzle, some force, and then the rocket is propelled in the opposite direction, even in a vacuum. So this is the law of motion in the physical realm. But in the psychic realm, there is a similar law that for every action, there is a reaction. Now, Newton said for every action is an equal and opposite reaction. The law of karma, the law of this human psychic law, is a little bit different, and that's what I want to explain today. So we say for every action, there is a reaction. How does this work? We have to understand the mind in order to understand this concept best. So the mind, one way to do it, because I'm here on the radio, I can't draw a diagram as I usually do, but I'll say it in another way, that the mind can be thought about like a hollow rubber ball. A hollow rubber ball. Now, whenever you make an action, whether it's a good action or a bad action, what you're doing is you're, in a way, you're distorting your mind a little bit. your mind has changed. You did some action and it has an effect on your mind. So you picture the ball as that action is like an indentation in the ball. And you know, when you make a when you have a rubber ball and you have an indentation, it will also usually will pop back into the original form of the ball. Now, when this happens, when the mind, you make some action, maybe a good action, and then the ball pops back. When that ball pops back, that signifies the mind regaining its normal state of balance. And when the mind pops back after a good action, when the mind comes back, that person will feel pleasure. Now there's another possibility. Someone does a bad action and then the mind is distorted again. And when it pops back, that person experiences pain. So many times, but not always, when we do an action, we will get a reaction quite quickly. For instance, if you punch someone in the mouth and a person's not a pacifist or just ready to run away, you may get a punch back at you. So you punch somebody. Now you think you're hurting somebody. Your fist landed on somebody's chin. But also, when you do that, your mind is also affected. It's bent out of shape, you can say, if you use the analogy of the ball. So you're bent out of shape a little bit. And when that person, and if that person hits back immediately and hits you on the chin, you feel some pain and your mind comes back into equilibrium. So this is, and in this case, the action was opposite and maybe equal. But there's other case. You hit somebody on the chin, and that person indeed is a pacifist, and doesn't hit you, goes away. And you think, oh, you got away with that one. You got away with it. But your mind, that there's an indentation on your mind. This is distortion. So you have done an action. A reaction should be coming. That reaction, which should be coming, is a stored up reaction, is reaction and potential. The Sanskrit word for that is sanskara. So there's good sanskaras, where you did some good action. There's some negative sanskaras, means that you will get a pain if you reap that negative sanskara. So all day long, whenever we're acting, especially when we're conscious that we're acting, you know, I am acting, I am hitting the ball, I am catching the ball, I am talking, I am sitting, I am driving, I am eating, I am this, I am that. Whenever we're doing any action, we're creating these sanskaras. It means reactions and potential, because not everything that we do has an immediate effect. In fact, most of the things that we do and we think don't bring immediate effects. So we're piling up many, many of these sanskaras. And a good term which my guru, Sri Sri Anandamurti, has used, I think he's the only one who's described it this way. He says, these sanskaras are reactive momenta. This is an excellent way to describe it. The sanskaras, your actions, create a momentum which has to be reckoned with. For instance, suppose today you decide that you've had enough of this world. You know, like this idea, stop the world, I want to get off. You say, I'm going to go into permanent retreat now. I'm going to sit in my room and I'm only going to do meditation and I'm going to be really, really peaceful. So you're sitting there and then what happens? Your phone rings. And then maybe someone knocks on the door. It's the bill collector. You didn't pay your bill. And then an hour later, some friend comes to see you. Why? Because you have there's a momentum of your life. this momentum of your life, the things you have done in you know, for the last 20 years, 30 years, I don't, depends how old you are. And not only that, the yogis say there's even a momenta from previous lives. So we have a momenta, and that guides us. And according to these reactive momenta, sankskaras, which is colloquially known as, people say, yeah, it's your karma, yeah, it's your karma. You have a load of karma, you know, from somewhere, either from this life or the past. So your sankskaras create a momentum that you have to reckon with, and you can't just decide today, yes, I'm not going to do any more action, and you're still going to be dealing with all the actions of the past. So this is the human condition, that whenever we do some action, we create a situation where there will be either an immediate reaction or usually a reaction in potential. So what does this have to do with our life and with spirituality? First of all, the yogis have used it to explain one phenomenon, which is the theory of birth and rebirth. What they say is that when you die, you don't finish up all your business. And you know that too, like that when after you die, you know, there's still you have bills that have to be paid and so many things. That's why people have, they make wills and estates. Because life doesn't stop when your actions and your consequences don't stop when your breath stops. They go on. But not only that, when the body dies, there's something remains. This is a spiritual concept. The yogis call that the Atman, the witnessing consciousness. So that's a very important concept. And the Atman, but you don't take your body with you. You can't take it with you. So that's why, like, in the Egyptian pyramids, they used to put wealth for the pharaohs to enjoy in the afterlife. But this, you don't have any organs to enjoy the fine wines or grains or whatever else, the gold or whatever else they would bury with that coffin, that mummy. So, but when you die, there is the Atman and sankskaras, and they define a certain kind of momentum which has to be fulfilled. And that's where, what reincarnation is all about, that to fulfill those unfinished businesses, unfinished business, there's no businesses, unfinished business, to fulfill the unfinished business, then that soul takes rebirth in a body, and then you experience things from your previous reactive momentum. There's a momentum driving you, and that's why everybody has a different momentum, from especially from the past. For example, there may be a little girl at an early age, and she goes into a music shop, and this is a true story because my neighbor told it to me, my friend told it to me. He said, yeah, my girl went into the music shop and she just looked up on the wall at the violin. She says, I want that. But you'll take another person into the shop and then he will look at the baseball bats. And, you know, and so everyone, we have different tendencies. Someone will start to play the piano or the violin at an early age, and we wonder how this phenomenon of the musical prodigy is. But the yogi would say that it could be a sankskara from the past guiding that. So this is the science of action and reaction and of life and rebirth. But what to do about this? But what practical effect, or what can we do about it to guide our lives? So what the yogis say is that the ideal state is that if you can exhaust all of your reactions, the reactive momenta from the past, exhaust them and not create new ones, when that state is reached, the mind merges with the cosmic consciousness. Someone gets liberation. Like Buddha talked about nirvana. He escapes that wheel of birth and death and rebirth. Escape it. you escape the rat race, in a sense, you know, if you look at it that way. You reach pure consciousness. But it's not so easy, because every time we get an action, like for instance, here's one example. Suppose you're riding a bicycle, and at one instance, you fall off the bicycle. Now the yogi will say, in a way, that's a good thing. You're burning some sankskara. There was some action from the past, and now you kind of maybe negative, and now you fall off, and what happens is your mind is going back to its proper shape, and because it's coming back from like a negative state, you experience some pain. So the yogi, from the yogi's point of view, oh, that's a good thing has happened in a way. Not good, but that's the good side of it. You always have to see the bright side of everything, right? So that's the good side of it. You're getting rid of one sankskara. But as the normal condition of humans is, especially if we're not trained, immediately we start complaining, that bicycle, that other guy hit me, and you get pent up emotion again. You're creating new sankskara. So usually we're exhausting some sankskara and we're creating new ones. So we're tangled up in the sankskaras. Now, someone might say is, I want to do only good actions, and then I'm going to reap good reactions. So this is one theory. And even the whole idea of heaven and hell is based on that. Yeah, you do lots of good actions and you go to some place and you will experience only good things. And if you do bad things, you experience it. So this is one way of looking at it. But the yogis look at it another way. They say that whether it be a good sankskara or a bad sankskara, or if you, to put it in colloquial terms, either good karma or bad karma, they're the same in their chains, their bondages, chains of iron, or in the case of the bad sankskara, or a chain of gold. But even if you have a gold chain on you, it's still a chain. It restricts your freedom. And in this case, what is the freedom? It is restricting the freedom of your mind and your consciousness to merge with the cosmic consciousness. So the whole science of spirituality is to exhaust the sankskaras and not create new ones. Now, how to do this? This is how to do this. One way, of course, is, you know, and sankskaras are also like, I'll give another example. They're like weeds in a garden. If you've ever grown a garden, you know that in the spring now, like this time of year, which I'm talking in May, you start from fresh, and you dig up your soil, and then you take out everything, and you have some nice soil, and it's fresh, pristine, nothing is there. But if you're an organic gardener and you're not using any herbicides or anything, you know that condition is not going to last long. Why? Because the seeds of so many weeds and things are in the ground, and they rise up to the top, and then they start to come up. They ripen, that the seed, weed seeds somehow ripen, and they start coming up. Similarly, in human life, sankskaras ripen. They ripen at different intervals. Now, what the yogis say is that whenever the mind and the body get detached in a way, like in one way to do that is if you get punched out, you know, you go into an unconscious state. So mind and body are separate at that state. The body is doing one thing, the mind is not there with it. Or even if you do deep meditation, what you do in deep meditation, you have to forget about the body. Mind and body become a little bit detached. In that condition, the old sankskaras ripen quicker. So in a way, that's why sometimes people are confused from this phenomenon, is that they started a spiritual practice like meditation, and they expect now they're going to become very peaceful and nice, and life is going to be smooth. And what they find many times is that their life become more complicated after they begin, and they get more thoughts, and old thoughts start coming, Even they're trying to be peaceful, but all thoughts are coming. And the reason is this, it's all sankskaras, like the weeds in the garden are coming up quicker. The weeds come up quicker when there's warmth and proper conditions for them. So the sankskaras come up to ripen. So the yogis, we're ready, we can ripen our sankskaras quicker, but what can we do to exhaust them and not create new ones? So this is the science of karma yoga, and actually, you know, many people have heard of the Bhagavad Gita, which is one of the spiritual books of India, and the Bhagavad Gita is really just a discourse given by Krishna to his disciple Arjuna on the science of karma. So what did Krishna say? What do the yogis say? What should we do if we want to? We don't want a chain of iron. We don't want a chain of gold. What should we do? So what they say is this. There are a few ways to avoid creating this bundle of sankskaras, avoid creating some more trouble for the future. So first thing Krishna said is, you give up the fruit, the desire for the fruits of an action. So normally, whenever we do an action, we want to get some result. I'm studying on the exam. I want to get my bachelor's degree, my master's degree, my PhD. And sometimes people are so hung up on the goal, they don't do the action properly. So what the yogis say is, do the action and don't worry. Do the action properly and don't worry. Don't think about the fruit of it. Give up the desire. Just do your actions nicely. Don't think about what you're going to get from it. So this is the first approach that Krishna talked about and the yogis talk about. Then they say there's another way how to do actions in this world and not create reactions. Second approach is, I will do my action, but with a new kind of consciousness. I will do my action with the understanding that I am not the actor. I am not. Then who is the actor? That's a good question. If you are not doing it, then who is the doer? So what we're saying is our little ego is not the doer. We give up the vanity of doership. It's called the vanity of doership. So who is the doer? We think the cosmic consciousness is doing through us. So how do we do that? How can we do that? We have to remember that everything in this universe, whether it's animate or inanimate, is just consciousness which has been transformed. So if I'm looking at my computer now, that computer screen is cosmic consciousness. And my eyes and me, who's looking at it, is also cosmic consciousness. So it's just cosmic consciousness looking at cosmic consciousness. It's not a question of my little ego, but it's this, the cosmic consciousness is doing it. And the things which I'm interacting with, they are also expressions of cosmic consciousness. Another word for this is called the science of Madhu Vidya, the idea that Madhu means sweet, Vidya knowledge, the sweet knowledge that everything of this universe is composed of consciousness. So that's called, we can use it, there was a book, a famous book called Meditation in Action, but I don't know if, I read it many years ago, I don't remember if it's the same concept, but the idea here is that if you do your actions nicely and you always remember, you have mindfulness, the original author would agree on that, if you have mindfulness, that really you are not the ultimate actor. This cosmic consciousness is the actor. The things which you're acting with is cosmic consciousness. If you do your action like this, it's like a meditation. Because it becomes a spiritual act. That's how you transform a physical act into a spiritual act. You're digging in your garden and you're hoeing a lump of earth. So that lump of earth is cosmic consciousness. The hoe is the cosmic consciousness. The hand is the cosmic consciousness. You, that who are doing it, it's a cosmic consciousness that's flowing through you. That physical action becomes a spiritual action. and there's no negative or positive consequence or in the terms in sense of reaction. There may be a good consequence, you'll get some food from your garden, but there's no distortion of the mind. So this is called Madhuvidya. It's a science of action. It's called karma yoga too. It's a karma yoga. This is real, true karma yoga. You're doing karmas, which is actions, but there's no reaction. But this is a problem with this approach. So you begin to think, you get more into it. You think, well, I'm just an object of the Supreme Consciousness. Then you do some action which turns out pretty good. You say, yeah, but I'm a pretty good object of the Supreme Consciousness. So what has happened? Vanity has crept in. Vanity creeps in. That's one of the biggest obstacles on the spiritual path. So what should you do? If the vanity creeps in, then Krishna and the other yogis, they gave a third method. They say, just offer everything to the Supreme Consciousness. Offer all, your good, your bad. You offer everything to the at the altar of that Supreme Consciousness. So we offer, we make an offering. We say, I'm eating this food, but it's for you. I'm eating it for you, for that Supreme One. And so when we offer everything to the Supreme Consciousness, and if we use all three approaches, we give up, we don't think of the fruit of it, we give up the vanity of doing it, and finally we just offer everything. Everything, my whole life is an offering to God. When you do this, you don't create any negative reactions, and this is the what happens is then the mind gradually attains its original, undistorted form, and when that event happens, one will be able to experience cosmic consciousness. And if it happens at the end of the your cycle here on the earth, you know, then you emerge with that Supreme Consciousness and permanent liberation called moksha in the spirituality of Tantra. It's sometimes called Mahanirvana in Buddhism, but it's the same idea. So this is the science of karma. So it's action and reaction, the law of action, and the idea of the actions in potential, which is sankskara, and how to deal with the sankskaras. Now, about sankskara, I can go on more. We have different kinds. We have the kinds I was talking about of like the musical prodigies. That one is called an inborn sankskara. It's acquired. It's born. When you are born, it's from the past life. And then there are certain sankskaras that we acquire in our life, and they're due to our actions and also sometimes even imposed on us by the society. So if you're born in a society which says it's bad to eat pigs, then if you just, you know, you come into some contact with, you smell bacon or something, you will get, you'll vomit just at the idea of that, of eating that food. So that's a sankskara imposed by the society. And then there are some sankskaras that we create. We you know, consciously, I did this thing and I'm going to get it, you know. So we have inborn, and then we have imposed, acquired, and personally acquired. So we have a whole bundle of sankskaras, and the idea of for yogis is to become free, experience them, and then become free of them. One thing I want to say about this law of karma is sometimes misused and sometimes also misunderstood. Misused in the way that religions have sometimes been used to exploit people. For example, we have examples from the East and the West. In the West, the example is you did something, a poor people come to the priest and say, oh, we're suffering, we don't have enough food to eat, and, you know, we're not getting paid for our crops. And, you know, this happened in the feudal times, Middle Ages. People were working at the behest of the lords. Then the priest said, oh, my children, in the kingdom of heaven, you will be rich. So don't protest anything now. Don't upset the apple cart. Don't protest the society. It's God's way. But in the kingdom of heaven, you will certainly be blessed. And in the East, this doctrine of karma and reincarnation and sankskara has been used to also to justify social inaction. So we see someone who is suffering and malnourished and malclothed, and we say, yeah, in the last life he was certainly a sinner, let him suffer. So no, we cannot do that. Because regarding karma and reincarnation and sankskara, we all have good sankskaras, we have bad sankskaras, we've done so much in the past. Some of it was good, some of it was bad. And even if we've done bad things, we can experience that pain. It goes by not by specific action. It means that I starve someone, and now I have to starve in this life. No. It means that I have to experience a certain quanta of suffering for what I did in the past. But that quanta could be mental. So it means that when we see someone who's starving to death, we shouldn't say, let him starve. No. We have to use our human judgment and give that person food. And certainly that person may not have been a saint in the past, but no matter, we as humans cannot let anyone suffer. And so we feed that person. And if that person has indeed done something bad in the past, then we can let them, they will experience it, but maybe mentally. But as humans, we cannot justify inaction in the present because we know about the law of karma and reincarnation. No, we have to treat people with human respect. And if they have something to work out, they will work it out. But let them work it out on the psychic plane. Let them work it out in some other plane. We can never neglect fundamental human values. So this, in a nutshell, is what I want to say about the science of karma, the law of karma. Or if you don't believe it, you can say it's the theory of karma. Certainly, you have to experience it yourself. But it's the concept of karma, the concept of action, and the science of overcoming results and science of becoming one with the Supreme Consciousness. So you can read more about this. On my website, I have a lot of articles. It's dadaveda.com. Or you can go to our website, anandamarga.org, and you will find more material related to this subject. So thank you very much for listening, and we will catch you on another podcast.